to the Beer Healer Interviews. I am your host, Chris Lukianenko, and I scour this big brand land of ours, looking under fermenters and behind mash tuns to find the best beer stories to share with you. The Beer Healer Interviews is now available on all major podcast services. If you like the show and want to help out, can I ask you to simply rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast service? Just leave a few words and a rating and the podcast gods will do the rest. By doing this, you'll help others to discover the show more easily and hopefully get more people interested in this great industry that we call craft beer. So lately on the Beer Healer Interviews, it seems that wild ales are a pretty big thing around Australia. So many of you are interested in them and want to know more about them. I've had a few great guests on to talk about it. And then this week, my old mate Will Tatchell from Van Diemen Brewing released not one, not two, but three beers in his series of his Australian spontaneous ales. So I thought, what better time than right now to get the bloke on, and we're going to crack all three of these beers, and then we're going to have a bit of a drink, and he's going to take us through the tasting notes around these. So first up, welcome, Will. Thanks for coming on board,
Lucky.
Mate.
How are you, mate? I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, going well. Now, mate, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I'm pouring the elderflower. Camera, mate, what a labor of love this stuff is for you. You bloody love this. Like, this has been like, what is it, almost like 6 or 7 years in the making now. We've spoken a couple of times about it, and all of a sudden you bring out three that, from what I've seen on the interwebs, have been getting some pretty good reviews. People are pretty excited about these things, but I suspect no one's more excited than your good self, eh?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I spend so much time developing and then subsequent time in barrel and stuff, and then bottle conditioning. I think the average age of these three bottle conditioning is around six or seven months. It's sort of, I have to go back through my notes and become reacquainted with the beer, because it is such a long time, and there are obviously other things going along in the background that you sort of have to remember which beer is which and what's happening.
I find that so interesting that you can the whole thing around the way that you blend different age beers back together to get this final product is just, it's like magic to me. But obviously you're going okay at it, because as I said before, you've been copying some pretty good reviews around these beers. So tell us about this first one. This is the elderflower. Now, I've seen you on your Instagram today showing the elderflower bushes and throwing it into the cool ships and all that sort of stuff. Pretty cool sort of process to be involved with.
Yeah, look, this one sort of developed along the lines of there's a couple of elderflower bushes that we drive past along on the way to the brewery every day to work, and it's almost a case of, well, we're sort of doing a disservice if we don't utilise them. We also had some bushes up on the top of the farm that that were always prolific at this time of year, and we always wanted to go and do something with them. And last year sort of presented itself. We had a super cool evening on the 2nd of December, sort of out of season, or not out of season for Tassie, but where it dropped below 4 degrees, so it was prime. We sort of had a look at the weather a couple of days out and saw that it was prime for spontaneous season, and these flowers are in full bloom, so it was an opportunity for us to pick those flowers, throw them in the cool ship overnight, along with some beeswax from hives on the honey, and a little bit of residual honey there, and this is the end result. We sort of bottled it in April or May, or what does it say on the label? I can't even remember.
I had to put my glasses on so I could read, but I'm still struggling in this poor light at the moment.
Is it June? I think it might be June. So it's sort of, this beer is only just coming up to 12 months of age, but it absolutely tore through fermentation. So I got the terminal gravity after 3 months. So I don't know if that was the addition of the flowers or the honey, or just because it was a super night for spontaneous inoculation. But yeah, it absolutely tore through fermentation, unlike any other spontaneous that I've seen, it is where it is now.
You say it tore through fermentation and it's relatively new. Like, to me, 12 months for any other beer, you know, they always say fresh is best and all that sort of stuff, but for 12 months for any other beer is going to be past its use by date. What makes it so unique that these things are still great after 12 months?
Well, I suppose when you look at it, when we're working with some of our other spontaneous blends are upwards of 3.5 years, sometimes touching into 4 years and stuff. So when you look at it from that time frame, 12 months is relatively young in that sense of things. And we normally don't expect to, or I don't expect to use something of 12 months of age in many of our spontaneous beers, or at least not a huge portion, whereas this is 100% sort of 11-month-old beer.
Yeah, nice. All right, talk me through it. Tell me what I'm smelling, what I'm tasting.
So one of the things when we were brewing with it was an incredible elderflower is an incredibly pungent aroma. Anyone that's had elderflower cordial, it's an incredibly sort of one dimensional aroma and flavor.
Did Cotties ever make an elderflower cordial?
No, who did? There is one brand in Tassie. I don't think Cotties did, but there's a brand in Tassie that does a really good job of it. And the name escapes me. But I mean, even when we're brewing with it in the barrels, so the flowers went into the barrel as well.
Yeah.
That we're aging it in. The whole time, the aroma was the number one thing that was still there, and I expected it to fade at some point, but it just didn't. And subsequently, you get this huge perfume, elderflower perfume that comes out of the nose. And then you almost get this sort of lime sherbet spritz that dances across the palate. So,
I love the way you describe it. It's great.
But this is where we're trying to educate you on some of the terminology.
I struggle with the terminology, absolutely. And then when I'm tasting it, tell me about that.
So you have that lime sherbet spritz. It's still quite young in flavour, so the acid profile is not incredibly great. There's enough there to carry it across the palate. There's not a huge amount of either hops or malt. These styles of beers, we don't try and showcase those characters necessarily in the beer. And then it finishes relatively clean. Again, that's a component with only being 12 months of age. It hasn't had time to develop a lot of the complexity and nuances that these beers can certainly consist of further down the track.
Yeah. What's that I'm feeling at the sort of the back top of my throat, sort of back up in here? Is that the acidity sort of as it's going down the back, resting there?
Yeah, it's the acidity, but I think it's also some of that sort of the astringency from the elderflower, almost that dry, cordial sort of lime. It's almost like a grippy lime sort of character floating around in there. And I think most of that comes from the flowers.
So why is it okay in a beer like this where I've made a beer in the past, I forget who told me it was a take on Rogers, the Little Creatures Rogers, I tried to do that, and that came out quite astringent, and the person that sampled my beer told me that was in a negative way. Why is it a positive for something like this?
I suppose it has to do with the style of beer that we're trying to showcase. So something like a Rogers, you're looking after, or you're looking for balance and drinkability and something that you can go back to over and over again. So astringency in something like that is going to tear it down, because you maybe after one, maybe after two, you're not wanting to go back to it. Whereas something like this, because we've added something like an elderflower into it and stuff, we want to carry that grip and that sort of acidic bite or the astringency of the flower across the palate to sort of showcase that character.
And because for these beers, these aren't necessarily designed to be smash a six pack type session beers, are they necessarily?
Oh, you can if you want to. plenty of lambic lovers will certainly do that. But they're certainly designed to be sipped with someone else or around a table or wherever it might be, as opposed to taking. I wouldn't see too many people taking these down to the beach to play beach cricket with. Myself, I'm potentially only one of them. You might down at the shack or something, but you get a few looks if you did that instead of taking tins down. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you use the term lambic, which is of course the style of beer that we're talking about here. So just give us a quick little background on that style of beer.
Yes, a style of beer that was produced or has been produced for a couple of hundred years in Belgium, France, largely Belgium. So it's where they're utilising the indigenous yeasts that are harboured in the breweries or the surrounds of the breweries, and they don't put a commercial yeast onto it, so it's fermented with the local microflora, and that's subsequently why the fermentation takes such a long time, because the characters in that that we're after take years to in order to enact upon themselves and sort of showcase the complexity that we're after in the lambic style of beer.
And so you can talk about fermentation. The ferment starts off out the back in your cool ship, where you've thrown in the flowers and let the night air do its thing, let the little beast get on and start that process off. But once it goes into the second stage ferment, is that where you throw in the Everton yeast as well?
No. So none of this adds our house Everton yeast into it. So
all spontaneous.
This is completely spontaneous. So at no point do we pitch any yeast into this. Okay. This is completely open. So by extension, we lose control of this the moment it starts running to cool ship. So
that's what I like about it.
Whatever happens. We can certainly coerce and sort of put up a few barriers and stuff to try and coerce the yeast and the beer in the right direction, be that storage conditions or vessels or ingredients or certainly time in barrel. But effectively, we lose control and we have to wait and see whether or not the fruits of our labour come to something that we can ultimately blend or release.
I love that how Troy from Casey Brewing said on the podcast the other day that even the barrel can make a difference with these things, because whether the cooper has made that barrel well one day and not so well the next day means more air gets in, which more microbes, and just can completely change your beer, even though they can be sitting side by side in the same shed.
I think you'll find that obviously most breweries will number their barrels. We've gone to the extent of giving them all nicknames. So each of our barrels has a nickname on it, and they certainly all have their own character and nuances. And after 6 or 7 years of doing this, we're starting to learn what particular barrels do. And if we see them rotate through and stuff, we sort of have an idea of where things are potentially going to go.
Potentially, but you just never know, because the weather and all that sort of stuff can affect everything, can't it? I loved it how one time you talked about a storm coming through and that how that was going to, you know, mix things up and potentially change everything, eh?
Well, what was this? So my notes, so again, we take pretty detailed notes on the weather that the 72 hours leading up to a spontaneous brew, and this was the temperature dropped to 3.9 degrees and there was a gentle west-northwest winds coming through. So that was the night of the inoculation, that it sat in cool ship outside the doors of the brewery and stuff. And I don't have any sort of validation whether or not that makes any difference, but we record it down, and we certainly a little speculative about the part that it plays. And I mean, at the moment I'm scanning ahead, even though we're slightly out of spontaneous season, I'm scanning ahead to a couple of weeks in advance to see whether we can duck one in for the last bit of the season and potentially do a second elderflower.
Oh, nice. So tonight we've got the three beers, and that's three large bottles of beer. So obviously I'm not going to be drinking them all on a school night. I will be taking these down to the wifey, Mel, after I finish, to share them with her, because she is a fan of the spontaneous ales, which it just blows my mind that she hates all other beer. But all of a sudden, every time I get some of these, she wants to try them. And sometimes she likes them more than me.
You're not going to share them with your son either, are you?
No, he's 16. He's far too young to be starting to be drinking. But if he was to try beer, he'd be trying something extremely light, like maybe a Carlton Dry or something, I suspect. He wouldn't be. He's not ready for this sort of stuff yet. I hope one day we can sit down and we can share a beer like this and talk about it, because that's what I love. Like, talk about it and talk about why we like it or why we dislike it or what we can taste. I like that's why.
Absolutely,
mate, as you know, that's why I do these bloody things every week. The conversations.
That's why most of us are in the industry, because we get on. It's such a social lubricant. We enjoy discussing something that people can get so passionate about. So it's enjoyable from our end as well.
Yeah, absolutely. What are we moving on to next, mate? The fence line or the wild nectar?
Yeah, let's move on to the fence line.
Okay. Hold this one up for everybody to see. So we'll crack the beer, the fence line. Tell us about this one, mate. What makes this one different? Well, obviously it doesn't have elderflower in it, but what else is different about this beer?
So this one is a blend of 1, 2, and 3 year beer. So there's a bit more complexity going on. So there's the words we use are what were they? Venus sharp and
now I've got a pear and wet hay.
Yeah, so Fruity, Venus, and Sharp. So the background of this one, for those that had it or may have seen it, we did a spontaneous beer released 18 months ago called Unpredictable Spring. And it was incredibly,
how good was that beer?
Yeah, incredibly easy drinking for something that we did first upstart. That was pretty special. So what we've tried to do with this is recreate that character, but just take it up a little bit. So we just wanted a little bit more funk into it, a little bit more sharpness, a little bit more acidity, just to improve the complexity of there, just to push it up a notch to see whether or not we could sort of, take it from where Unpredictable Spring was and just bring it up a tad.
This, I like this one,
So there's a sort of pear wet hay coming through on the nose, which is largely synonymous with these lambic style beers.
Yep.
And then it sort of goes into a bit more of a balanced sort of front palate.
It feels smooth at the start,
And then the acidity continues to build across the back palate.
And it's kind of like when you put a fruit tingle in your mouth and it starts to slowly get more and more happening.
Or even one of those, the sour bomb.
Yeah.
Thing. So one of those, you chew a few of those and it starts to get a bit drier on the back.
Yeah, you can sort of feel it go. Maybe I am learning something about this stuff, mate.
Yeah. So it just sort of,
dangerous.
You get that, you sort of get that sort of tart character floating across the mouthfeel and stuff. So it sort of hit the nail on the head. So I think most of it is 2 year beer. So there's an element of sort of 1 year beer that we blend in there just to add a bit of freshness, a bit of young sort of vibrancy into it. And then the 3-year-old beer is there largely playing that sort of tannic acidic role that we spoke about that flows across the palate.
Does the younger beer affect the taste at the start and then the older beer the sort of affects the taste at the end of the swig, if you like?
Oh, look, they all byplay across the palate. It depends on your palate as well, what you pick up on, whether or not you perceive acidity better than sweetness or whatever it might be. So it takes a big byplay, which is where it's risky with me sort of blending these and hopefully trying to blend for many palates and things. It's sort of, you're sort of on a bit of a whim that hoping that you're a catch all for everyone. knowing that you never will be.
Yeah. It's funny, you look at them side by side, they look exactly the same, these beers, but one sniff and it's like, whoa, shit, they are like completely different. Far more perfumey, the Elderflower, I think, for mine.
Well, it's going to be interesting. We've got Elderflower. We've got a second puncheon, which is 500 litres, sitting there still ageing. And that's obviously coming up to 12 months. And that the perfume on that hasn't gone anywhere. So it's still as vibrant as what it was the day we put it in. So it's an incredible sort of flower. And we put bugger all, I think it was 2 kilos of flowers into 1,000 litres of beer.
Shit.
So it wasn't much.
Yeah, okay. And so this one, again, done in the cool ship, same as the other one, but this time you haven't thrown anything extra in terms of like another bit of vegetation or anything like that in there.
No.
Same, both oak barrels?
Same. All French oak.
All French oak.
Most of it's Chardonnay.
Yep.
And I mean, the average age of the beer in this the blend is about 32 months.
Yep. So, Troy Casey said oak is magic. Do you agree with him?
Well, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it was. And it certainly.
You could just say yes. You have to make fun of me, bastard.
No, I'm not making fun of you. I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
It is. It's wonderful stuff. Wonderful stuff. Far, far better being put to use with beer, I think. Bloody Chardonnay.
I don't know about it. A few winemakers might
disagree
with that one.
All righty. That is delicious, that beer. I love that one. So that one was the fence line holding up there. Mate, just very quickly before we move on to the next one, what's the significance between the colours of the logos that you're using here? Fence line, different to
fence line. Fence line. It runs with that green and yellow. Just as a, they're the colours that we chose for the Wilderness Project.
Oh right.
Which encapsulates all of these spontaneous beers.
Yep.
And the Elderflower. The colour on that is simply a little tip of the hat to the colour of the flower.
Oh cool.
It sort of comes through as a cream. Cream doesn't necessarily show up on a white label, so it's gone a little bit yellower. Yellow. So yes.
Is that stuff all? Still handled by the boss. Oh, Jesus, this one's going everywhere on my desk. What is going on there?
This one's got a little bit more funk to it.
It's got a little bit more life to it too. Jesus, you're going to get me in trouble, dear. Stuff going on the floor.
Did you have it in the fridge first?
Yeah.
Okay, then. No.
It's all right.
You might not know how to pour a beer.
No, I just took the top off it and it just started going everywhere.
I will admit, it does have a bit of life about it.
It is life, yeah. That's okay. That's all right. I'm going to smell this beer for days in my office here. It's going to be great.
Oh, good. I can think of worse things.
Yeah. All right, the Wild Nectar. So what do we got going on here?
So peach average age of 26. Peach and nectarine, average age of 26 months. White peach, nectarine fruit, all whole fruit. I've got to go back to this.
You check your notes. I've got my handy baby wipes just to clean up the mess here. You can never go wrong with baby wipes. It's been a long, long time since I've had a baby, but these things save you. They're brilliant. But I digress. Back to the peach and nectarine.
Rightio, yeah. White peach.
White peach.
We brewed a spontaneous beer. It pretty much sat around for 2 years doing its thing, working its magic.
Totally different again.
We then pulled it out of barrel and put it in a stainless tank and aged it on fruit. Put it in stainless or aged it in barrel with fruit? I can't remember. And then after that 10 months of aging on the fresh fruit and stuff, we then blended with a slightly older beer just to bring through a bit of that funk and acidity.
Yep.
And what you're left with is something that on the aroma is quite sweet.
Yep.
Certainly tell that there's sort of like a flowery peach, sort of like a summer afternoon.
It's hard to describe an aroma as like sweet. It's like,
well, it's sort of like I get it as a as almost a partially stewed fruit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's sort of sitting on the saucepan and potentially starting to caramelize a little.
That's how
I get it.
I'm following you. Yeah, yeah.
And then as it comes into the palate, there's a level of sweetness there that is largely derived from the fruit. But then again, we're after this gripping sort of acidity, which is that older beer, the more complex stuff,
yep.
That sort of comes through and just bites at the back. Nowhere near the amount that the first two, Fence Line and Elderflower.
Yep.
But there's sort of that sweet summer fruit sort of mouthfeel in there, a lot of ripe stone fruit from the peach and nectarine. And it's about providing that balance between the underlying beer style of the sour beer that's been in barrel for two years and a third year component, along with the fruit that you bring it all together and try and put it into a bottle or put it into a glass that that people are going to enjoy.
This feels like the summer quaffer to me, and it's the heaviest of the three beers in terms of ABV.
But it actually tastes the easiest drinking.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. Hey, the fruit in this.
Something,
sorry, go.
Yeah.
You go first.
It's something about those peaches and nectarines and those sort of styles of fruit, apricots again, that they create this sort of flowery palate that tend to draw away the presence of alcohol, which make it seem like it's sort of a 4.5% to 5.5% beer as opposed to a 7-odd% beer.
Yeah. Hey, in terms of the fruit, I know when we've spoken in the past. I mean, you fed me some of the questions for Casey Bruin the other week, and you were asking about how he treats his fruit. And he's just like, we just get it and chuck it in. I've heard of other people using the aseptic fruit, I think is, I don't know if that's the correct term. What do you do?
We're pretty much with the same as Troy at Casey.
Yep.
We're utilizing all whole fruit. We're never getting in purees or anything. I mean, in Tassie, we're blessed with having a plethora of farms and horticulture and things that we're able to draw upon. And it's about creating those strong relationships with growers and stuff. And I know that we're about to get the first picked raspberries from a farm up here moment. And we're not going to pay through the teeth like the first box of mangoes up in Sydney or Brisbane or wherever it is. But it's about those relationships. And we're certainly using whole fruit when we have the access to them here in Tassie.
Yeah. So, and also in terms of your farm, obviously these are all the estate ales where you're using your own barley, your own hops, your own water from the spring. In the past, you've used the hedgerow berries. You've used slow berries, I think, from memory. You obviously use the elderflower. Now, what's left to use on the farm that you haven't used so far?
We're actually just about to do a beer with clover flowers.
Really? Clover,
yeah,
isn't it?
Clover flowers, hawthorn flowers, or hawthorn blossom.
Wow. Whatever you can get your bloody hands on, it sounds like.
Acorns, oak leaves.
What about the oak tree? What do you throw a few of them?
We've got a little project on the side at the moment that nice. That certainly leverages that the big girl out there on the lawn that it's a watch this space.
Oh, mate, I still have fantastic memories of sitting underneath that oak tree on that 30-degree day in Launceston, sipping on beers such as these with some great people. The world's smallest yet most magnificent beer festival I think I've ever been to.
What a day. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
If anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about, check my YouTube page for Into the Wilderness and you'll see what a magnificent day we had up there in Evandale. Fantastic stuff. So, hey, mate, look, thanks for joining me tonight to talk about these beers. I know you're about to run out of battery on your phone, so we better make it quick. I just want to have a really quick chat about it anyway, just so that people know the amazing stuff that you are doing up there in Evandale. There are other people around Australia also doing this. It's tend to, you know, perhaps get a little bit more notoriety or, you know, news time and that sort of thing. But the stuff that you're doing down here I think is absolutely world-class. And people can jump onto your website, order the beers, get in touch with you. These are amazing. I'm going to say that I think, for me, the Elderflower, the most unique of the three. The Wild Nectar, probably the most smashable of the three. But for me, I think the Fence Line wins. And I loved Unpredictable Spring last time, so maybe that's what is that? Just amazing.
Little tip of the hat to Unpredictable Spring. It's a pity that I did find a bottle lurking in the cool room the other day that I haven't. I'm going to put them up against each other and do some tasting notes and see which one of them just sort of comes out on top. So
that'd be cool. Yeah. And look, if anybody wants to know more about what Will does, check out his Instagram page. His Instagram story is always entertaining. And I think it was today or yesterday, there was all the stuff from making the Elderflower beer on there, which it was certainly educational for me. It was an absolute ripper where you got to see him throwing the flowers in. There was the cool ship and all that sort of stuff, and being a dickhead like he usually is, but in a good way. I mean that.
Hey, you're better off being a dickhead and showing everyone than being a cool bloke and no one knows.
Fair call. Good words to live by. All right, mate. Well, thanks for joining me tonight. It's been awesome. Everybody get out there and find these beers because they are bloody amazing. So, mate.
Only 1,000 bottles of each of them. So
Be quick.
Yeah.
Cheers to great
beers.
Beautiful,
Loki.
Cheers.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you have an interesting beer story and want to be a guest on the Beer Healer interviews, send me a message via my Facebook page. And once again, if you want to help out the show, a simple rate and review on Apple Podcasts or a follow, like, or share on any other podcast service will do the trick. I'll catch you soon.